فكانت هباء منبثا وكنتم أزواجا ثلاثة فأصحاب الميمنة ما أصحاب الميمنة وأصحاب المشأمة ما أصحاب المشأمة والسابقون السابقون أولئك المقربون في جنات النعيم ثلة من الأولين وقليل من الآخرين على سرر موضونة متكئين عليها متقابلين يطوف عليهم ولدان مخلدون بأكواب وأباريق وكأس من معين لا يصدعون عنها ولا ينزفون وفاكهة مما يتخيرون ولحم طير مما يشتهون وحور عين كأمثال اللؤلؤ المكنون جزاء بما كانوا يعملون لا يسمعون فيها لغوا ولا تأثيما إلا قيلا سلاما سلاما وأصحاب اليمين ما أصحاب اليمين في سدر مخضود وطلح منضود وظل ممدود وماء مسكوب وفاكهة كثيرة لا مقطوعة ولا ممنوعة وفرش مرفوعة إنا أنشأناهن إنشاء فجعلناهن أبكارا عربا أترابا لأصحاب اليمين ثلة من الأولين وثلة من الآخرين وأصحاب الشمال ما أصحاب الشمال في سموم وحميم وظل من يحموم لا بارد ولا كريم إنهم كانوا قبل ذلك مترفين وكانوا يصرون على الحنث العظيم وكانوا يقولون أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئذا متنا وكنا ترابا وعظاما أئنا لمبعوثون
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم صلوا على محمد وآل محمد Dear brothers and sisters, Sheikh Osama, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to welcome you all and congratulate you, inshallah, on the birth of Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam. Inshallah, to start off our program tonight, I would like to welcome our dear brother Muhammad Abbas. Please help me welcome him with a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
صلوات على محمد وآل محمد. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. أن اعبدوا الله واتقوا وأطيعوا. أن اعبدوا الله واتقوه وأطيعون. أن اعبدوا الله واتقوه وأطيعون. يغفر لكم من ذنوبكم ويؤخركم إلى أجل مسمى. إن أجل الله إذا جاء لا يؤخر لو كنتم تعلمون. قال رب إني دعوت قومي ليلا ونهارا. قال رب إني دعوت قومي ليلا ونهارا فلم يزدهم دعائي إلا فرارا. وإني كلما دعوتهم لتغفر لهم جعلوا أصابعهم في آذانهم واستغشوا ثيابهم وأصروا واستكبروا استكبارا. ثم إني دعوتهم جهارا. ثم إني أعلنت لهم وأسررت لهم إسرارا. فقلت استغفروا ربكم إنه كان غفارا. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most merciful, the most beneficent. Worship Allah, fear Him, and obey me. Allah will forgive you of your sins and delay you for a specified term. Indeed, the time set by Allah when it comes will not be delayed if you only knew. He said, My Lord, indeed I invited my people to truth night and day, but my invitation increased them not except in flight. And indeed, every time I invited them that you may forgive them, they put their fingers in their ears, covered themselves with their garments, persisted and were arrogant with arrogance. Then I invited them publicly. Then I announced to them and confided to them secretly and said, Ask forgiveness of your Lord. Indeed, He is ever a perpetual forgiver. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Ahsant, if we could recite another loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters, Sheikh Osama once again. I'd like to welcome you once again and congratulate you all on the birth of Imam Rida alayhi salam. Inshallah, I would like to invite our dear sister Fatima Najdi to recite some poetry. If we could all welcome her with a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
السلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. My sincerest congratulations to all of you on the birth of Imam al-Ra'uf, Imam Rida alayhi salam. Today I just read a quote by Sheikh Panahian where he says, if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted to take us to hell, He wouldn't have given us a person like Imam Rida alayhi salam. This poem is very much in line with these lines, with this sentiment. If we can please begin with Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad
wa ali Muhammad. His shrine is our home and the key to the door of our wishes and dignity. We have already met Him when He guided us through revolution. He granted the sinners forgiveness, the poor abundance. He never left or died. Whatever you wish for is right by His side. If mountains knew what His shrine gave, they'd crumble to be His slave. His golden dome, His light outshines, and it knows no border lines. Who visits Ar-Ridha, Ar-Ridhawi He becomes. He grants more requests than there are pilgrims. His shrine is our home and the key to the door of forgiveness and mercy. He is the King of Mashhad and from whom guidance has spread. Let everyone sigh in relief and thank Ali ibn Musa for their belief. Thank God we have His shrine from which our faith He assigns. If it's the world's bounties that you want, make Him your confidant. If it's nearness that you long for, He has already come closer. There is no movement without Him. There is no movement without Him. The path is too dark and dim. His shrine is our home and the key to the door of love and proximity. We still don't know what God gave us. Mashhad is our axis of resistance. The kind Imam is resourceful too. Whatever you need or want, He gives you. He promises to return salams. Send them and ask by the right of His jawad. Through Him, sinners have turned to martyrs. How many hurs to Him surrender? Even if your love is weak, He is not. If you seek Him, then know that it is He who sought. If you seek Him, know that it is He who sought. It's as though He was killed for this, to forgive and show us His kindness. His shrine is our home and the key to the door of God Almighty. So sit with Him in your heart. Sit with Him in your heart if you are far. Write a letter to our kind Father. Tell Him beg him, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, I send my salams to you, O Ra'uf, knowing I don't deserve your reply. I'm the worst of those who send their salams, but I know you don't turn away the regretful. I can't lift my head when I speak to you, how could I? When the only honor I have is what your name on my tongue brings, I don't have a way to reach God alone. Not alone, I sin more than my fair share, and the road seems closed to me, but if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have known the road at all. But I do know it, and I do see it, but who am I to traverse it? I see everyone going and leaving me behind. Oh Ali, I don't want to be alone, and I don't want to be the cause of your displeasure, which is none other than the displeasure of God himself. I'm speaking to you with a knot in my throat and a nagging thought telling me, stop, why would he help you? Indeed, I ask myself, why would you help me? I am certain it doesn't have anything to do with me. I am certain it doesn't have anything to do with me, but Master, instead, how kind and affectionate you are. Could you see me in hell and do nothing about it? Could you see me sin and not assist and forgive me? I am not claiming to be something I am not. Here I am. I'm a sinner who knows the kindness of my Imam. My Master, Ya Ra'uf, I ask you by the generosity of your young Jawad to forgive my past and lay out a future for me that is from you yourself. Cut the ties that connect me to my past and let me leave you anew. I wasn't invited to your holy shrine, but be my host anyways. Invite me in and be the guarantor of my hopes and wishes, not because I deserve anything. I swear to God, you know I don't. But because of my sheer wanting and desperation, there is a burning fervor in my heart for just a glance from you. But my soul wouldn't forgive me if I didn't ask for more. Oh Ali, there isn't a pain your name doesn't heal, or a trouble that it does not ease, or a problem it does not solve, or a need that it does not grant. Oh Ali, I am already in your debt. I am already in your debt for all the good I have been granted, but my sins have stunted my advancement, and I fear for that close day. I fear for that close day, that bright morning when your Qa'im rises and I don't see I have a place with him. Oh Ali, never let us see that day. Grant us a place among his close helpers and soldiers. Tell him my name and vouch for my acceptance among them. With you, there are no limits to where anyone can go. With you, there are no limits to where anyone can go. Wassalamu alaykum jami'an wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Sent to Sister Sallallahu Alaihi Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Inshallah, I'd like to welcome you all once again. Just a reminder, there is a nursing room downstairs for nursing mothers, and also there's an area, cafeteria area, if the kids need a little bit more room. And inshallah, there is a library on the back of some of the different books that the scholars, Sheikh Osama, have recommended. So feel free to check that area as well in the back. Inshallah, with your help, we'll welcome Sheikh Osama with three loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah. I hope each and every one of you are doing well, and allow me to congratulate each and every one of you on the birth of this wonderful imam. not only are the mu'mineen and mu'minat here, but of course, the extended Hadi family who are online, and of course, our ummah, the mu'mineen and mu'minat around the world, the maraja, our leader, and of course, last but not least, sahib al-zaman. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Brothers and sisters, tonight I'd like to piggyback a little bit on what already has been shared. There are certain things about this wonderful imam that you and I, we've come to know, and I want to do a brief reminder of those and then to address a topic that I feel we haven't addressed here as the Hadi family. So, brothers and sisters may remember that our imam, because the approach that we have over here is not one where simply we talk about the greatness of the imam and his spiritual status, but kind of one where, in order for us to find where to place those great attributes, we need to know about his social and political role, his life and his legacy. So that's something that we always try to make a priority to study. So, having said that, if we remember, we may remember that our imam, in the beginning, when he first began his mission, for 10 years, he was a contemporary of an absolute monster, a man named Harun al-Rashid, one of the most savage of the Tawaghit. But what was interesting about Imam al-Ridha was that from the very beginning of his imamate, he never hid the fact that he was an imam. He was openly, I am the imam, calling to his imamate, doing his activities, not all of the secret activities, but calling open, to the extent that some of his companions, they came to the imam and they protested. They say, why are you doing this? We're living in the time of Harun. What they said, the words they said were that blood is still dripping from the sword of Harun. How is it that you're over? This isn't taqiyah, you're open. This is the imam, I'm the imam, calling people. And our imam made a statement. He said that if Harun can take one hair off of my head, if he can take one hair, remove one hair from me, then I'm not an imam. You don't worry about Harun. Harun, small potatoes. Why? What happened? Remember, what happened was the previous imam, Imam Musa, had been murdered by Harun. We're going to find out a little bit about why that was such a big event. The political fallout from murdering, and Harun tried to hide it. Later on, he even made that statement that the Qatil, this was without my permission. Of course, it was a secret. It's not open that he... But the political fallout was so terrible for Harun that he couldn't touch the imam. His kingdom would have fallen. Not that he had mercy on the imam or he liked the imam, but for him, if I try to make that move after I made that big move against Imam Musa ibn Ja'far, and then after that, again, immediately try to turn around and now turn on Imam al-Ridha, that's too much for my kingdom. So on one side, that. On the other side, the haraka of the imam, the movement of the imam, the mission of the imam is one where Harun, as the established khalifa who has no opposition, can weather the storm. There's one point that you and I should keep in mind. Transitioning from one wali to another, for many people, I would say even average Shia, sometimes can be difficult. So Imam Musa was an established figure, a father figure for the movement, 35 years of jihad. For him to martyr that imam was so heavy, but then the new imam, even if he's open about his imamate, and he's calling to his imamate, it's still something where I can weather the storm. So for this reason, he didn't want to touch him. So that allowed our imam for 10 years to move in relative freedom. We also, as the Hadi family, discussed Those years when Amin was fighting Ma'mun, there was a civil war in the Abbasid dynasty. Two brothers, the sons of Harun, were at war with one another. During that time where they were busy with one another, that was again an opportunity for our Imam to push the mission forward. But we talked about that. Then after that, we also have had the opportunity of talking about the time when he became the crown prince. Our Imam became the crown prince of Ma'mun. Of course, you and I, we realized and we looked at the strategy of Imam, and we realized that it wasn't because the Imam had accepted to become part of the process and to work from within. Nothing naive like that. Rather, this was the political genius of our Imam. And he bested Ma'mun at his game and resulted in crushing defeat for Ma'mun to the extent that Ma'mun had to martyr our Imam. So we've talked a little bit about that, the social and political side of the Imam. We also had the opportunity, alhamdulillah, to discuss some of the confirmed miracles of the Imam, meaning in more modern times, meaning over the course of now lectures, because we've been talking about the Imam on different occasions, the kindness of the Imam, the mercy of the Imam, mu'mineen and mu'minat who did tawassul to the Imam and got the results, confirmed miracles. We've also talked about that. We talked about, alhamdulillah, the thawab of doing ziyarah of this imam, the station of this imam. So alhamdulillah, those are some of the areas that we covered. Right now, I don't want to cover those areas. I feel like we've covered those areas. The topic that I talk about tonight, with your permission, inshallah, with the permission of Imam Ridha, I've titled it, Born into the Resistance. I want to talk about the first 30 years of the life of Imam al-Ridha. Why do we say he was born into the resistance? Is that just a statement? Is it, or was there something really incredible that happened? Now, quick disclaimer, I don't want this to be a talk because Imam al-Ridha is the first son of Imam Musa, the first child, the eldest of Imam Musa. Imam Musa, conservative estimates are that he had 30 children. Otherwise, the more well-known reports are 37 children. So this disclaimer now, this isn't a talk about Imam Musa, Imam Ridha, and his siblings, and what he was doing, and how his dad was. I'm kind of here, we're kind of looking again big picture. We want to talk about that legacy, the contemporaries, draw lessons and direction. When I say born into the resistance, in a reality, it's a way for us to get to know more about Imam Musa. He was the oldest son. 5 years after the martyrdom of Imam Sadiq is when Imam Ridha is born. So from the beginning of one of the most difficult and challenging parts of imamate, our imam is a witness. And when we say he was in that house, that means he was there from the beginning and watching the current events take place. In other words, with the permission of Imam Ridha, on his birthday, what we'd like to do is to learn a little bit about the imamate of his father. Here in the Hadi Institute, although we've been able to discuss many of the members of the Ahlul Bayt, and we're almost getting to a stage where, inshallah, we're able to put some of their lives together to see, okay, well, this imam stopped here, and then this imam did this, and this imam was different than the other imams because of these factors. But one area that whenever I look at our notes, the ideas, the things that we've been able to discuss, one area that's still an unknown for us are those 30 years. 35 years when our imam, if you look at the entire imamate of our imam, those 30 years where our imam was present, and that, with your permission, with the permission of the imam, is what I'd like to talk about tonight. We'll start with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Now, Imam Kadhim alayhi salatu wassalam, for many of us, And by the way, I recommend that brothers and sisters to enrich their experience and understanding about all of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhimu salam. They look at, in addition to lectures by myself, by other qualified scholars, inshallah, if they look, instead of looking only at those, that we also become readers, and that we encourage our children to read. We read and encourage our children to read. There is a book, The Lives of the 12. A lot of the details that might be missed in the speech, you'll find over there. For instance, one of the areas that I don't feel like we've delved into, and I'm not even sure, I'd have to look again at that book, The Lives of the 12, is the issue in the life of Imam Ridha of the Waqifiyya. That was a very dangerous movement. It was the plague that was there at the time of the beginning of the Imamate of Imam Ridha. It was a threat that if it wasn't stopped, could have snuffed out the light of Islam. And it was only the steady hand of Imam Ridha that was able to save us from this internal threat. But now some of these kind of details, or of the even the details, the timeline of the life of Imam Kadhim, is something which I would encourage brothers and sisters to kind of look at, to see, and then to get a more rich experience and understanding, and then after that direction. What happens is that when we look at the lives of Imam Musa in particular, for many of us, our understanding of this imam might be a skewed one. We might think of, let's say somebody said, please, can you tell me the life legacy of Imam Musa, the father of Imam Ridha, how did it all begin? We might have sort of a picture of someone who was madhloom and oppressed and spending a lot of time in prison, Imam Musa, right? Someone who would make long du'as. Right, we would talk about maybe his spirituality, his station with God, his connection, these kind of things, but we might not know too much about his contributions. Why would it be the case that Imam Ridha, if he's the son of this man, is someone who was born into the resistance? What happened? What did Imam Musa do? Why was it so special? Why would him and his family be so happy to know that Imam Ridha is born? Just the smile on the face of the Imam, to know that, no, it's going to continue. What were the circumstances like of Imam Kadhim alayhi salam, Imam Musa? I will try to get to that. But what you hear historians say is that perhaps the most difficult time for any imam to begin his movement after Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wassalam was Imam Musa. It was that complicated, that difficult. And he resisted under those circumstances. So when you say born into the resistance, it's really something special. But before we get into that, again back to the story that we have about Imam Musa. We may know facts about the imam. We may know stories about the imam, but sometimes they're kind of scattered facts. It's not really that we know the framework of the actions of the imam, and then we can put everything in its proper place. So what we'll try to do is to first remind ourselves of the general framework and direction and strategy of Ahlul Bayt from Amirul Mu'mineen up until the imam of the time. Well, of course, we don't see him apparently, but he's the one who we're watching and inshallah waiting and preparing for. The general strategy, general framework, after that, once we know that, to kind of put the details that we do know about the life of this imam in their place, so that we end up with that kind of better picture about the life of this wonderful imam. But again, we'll start with salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Again, in order to help me organize my thoughts, I want to raise some questions for us to think about, and then to see if these questions, if they're answered, inshallah, Allah gives tawfiq, we're able to address at least some of these questions. If they're answered, does it give me that better picture of why it is that someone would say that the imam was born into the resistance? What happened in the time of Imam Musa? So we'll start off with a couple of questions. Number one, when Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was introducing our Imam, Imam Musa. Remember, Imam Musa is 20 years old when he becomes the Imam. 20 years old. Why is it that the Imam would tell even his close companions, don't tell anyone who the Imam, except if you trust this individual, don't tell him who the Imam is after me. Literally, individuals would come to the Imam and they would ask the Imam, who is the Imam? And the Imam would give them the signs. A person who has this particular characteristic, he's the Imam. Someone has these characteristics. Why would the Imam do that? Why not just go over and remember, if you, brothers and sisters, remember a couple of weeks ago, we even talked about when the Imam finally became shaheed. And then he made a wasiyah. And in his wasiyah, he lifted five individuals as his wasi. One of them was Mansur, his killer. Another one was a governor. Right? One of them was the Imam. But what were the conditions? This will, inshallah, help us understand. What were the conditions that the Imam began under that made it necessary to do this? What was the secret? So that's one question. Number two, we hear stories of an individual, a wonderful individual. Inshallah, we can be like this individual. Named Ali ibn Yaqtin. Ali ibn Yaqtin is someone who becomes the minister of the Taghut of the time. Harun, I said the monster? He becomes a high-ranking official in the system of the Taghut. But this individual, a student of the Imam, lover of the Imam, supporter of the Imam, he tries to quit his job. I don't want to be around these terrible people. Several times he asks the Imam for permission. If you allow me, I will retire. And the Imam says, no, you must stay. At the same time, other close individuals, lovers of the Imam, good people, we see that the Imam, one of them, a man named Safwan, the Imam is so harsh with him when he has even the slightest dealings with the tawaghit. So why is it that one encouraged to be inside the system, but then the other, any kind of dealings, even if it's for a hajj trip, a ziyarah trip, then the Imam is so stern and severe with him. Our Imam is also going to be in a situation where he faces, in the beginning and the end of his imamate, two of the most savage of the tawaghit. One of them, Mansur, who is legendary. And then the other, Harun, again, powerful, capable, evil. Then in between, he has two others, right? So it's going to be 10 years with Mansur, 12, 13, the remainder of his imamate with Harun. But then in between, there are two others. Each one of these tawaghit present a particular challenge to the Imam. And the Imam is struggling against these individuals. But one thing that we find is common. All of the tawaghit, we see a couple of things with them. We don't understand why. They come to the conclusion that the Imam needs to be exiled. The Imam needs to be imprisoned. They come to the conclusion the Imam needs to be executed. What was it that the Imam was doing that would lead them to all come to this kind of a conclusion? The other one that we want to look about is because our Imam, his activities are going to be such that he spends a period of his life living in hiding, on the run. That literally, they say, we saw the Imam, he was living in a village, running village from village, in Syria, on the run from the authorities, wearing different kind of clothes. What was the Imam doing that would lead to this kind of a thing? And then, again, that same harsh, savage response from the tawaghi. And then, finally, towards the end, is one of the very interesting parts of the life of the Imam where he's dealing with Harun. Why is it that in the beginning, when Harun is first beginning his mission, not mission, what do you call the tawaghit? They don't have missions. Beginning his reign, his tyranny. In the beginning, he tries to be a nice guy, Mr. Nice Guy to the Imam. Respectfully meet with him. And we see that the Imam is very stern with this individual. Then, to the end, the Imam, when he is dealing with him and talking to him, the conversations that he has with him are such where he makes it absolutely clear that the PR stunt, he's going to pull a PR stunt, and the imam's going to make it absolutely clear that there's no peace between us, there's only eternal resistance. So, inshallah, we'll take those questions, and then, inshallah, come to some conclusions. Salawat, please. So, let's start off with the framework. What it is that an imam does. This is not unique to any particular imam. Imam Musa is doing this. Imam Ridha does this. Imam Hassan does this. All of the imams, they do this. What are some of the things, because then we'll be able to make sense of some of the details. What are some of the things that every imam does? Number one is that the imams were ensured that they would teach Islam as is. The job of the imam, these are our marching orders, by the way, to make sure that we teach Islam as is. I want to share one verse of the Quran, because when you look up, brothers and sisters, inshallah, you can look up the word al-balagh in the Quran. You'll see something like this. So one of the verses, the Quran says this, وَمَا عَلَى الرَّسُولِ. The Rasul, the messenger, has no job, illa al-balagh al-mubin, to clearly communicate the message, Islam as is. If you look up this word in the Quran, al-balagh, you'll see a couple of things. One, this was the message and the mission of all prophets, all anbiya, all rusul. Their job was to communicate the message as is. It's one where Allah reassures, you look at the various verses, Allah reassures that prophet, if he's talking to our prophet, reassures the prophets, you do your job, the people, they listen or they don't listen. God's watching. God sees. You do your job. So he reassures the prophets that they would do this. So this was the principal stance of each and every imam. Why was this so important? Brothers and sisters, this also goes back to the strategy of the Ahlul Bayt. If the Ahlul Bayt would go even to wrest political power from the monsters, the Tawaghit, without having preached and taught Islam as is, another Tawghut would simply take the place of the previous Tawghut. The people needed to grow. When Islam was preached as is, this would stifle the Tawaghit. They wouldn't be able to have any room to maneuver. But Islam had to be taught it is, because the enemies of Islam were using Islam as a weapon against Islam. They would have deliberately teach certain principles in Islam. But in order to misguide, in order to justify their rule, and that growth needed to happen, the people need to know what Islam is. And then they can find a way of how to resist against these tawaghit. There are people who might tell you that no, right now people don't need to know Islam as is. Tell them what they want to know of Islam. Don't emphasize all of Islam as is. The responsibility that actually we have, what we're advised by ulama, is you keep speaking the truth. Let people understand what the truth is. Let them hear it enough to know that, no, I'm resisting what Islam is. Don't give them a message that they already know. Share what Islam is. People love Islam. But once they know that, no, God says this, Quran says this, Ahlul Bayt stood in this way, if I'm standing against this, because I have a problem. That's actually the solution. And that's what it is that the Ahlul Bayt would do. So what did the Ahlul Bayt teach? They had to reteach fundamental concepts like the concept of Tawheed. Tawheed, according to the Quran, is one where obedience, even think about this in modern days, Tawheed of the Quran, obedience to anyone in disobedience of Allah is shirk. Tawheed, ayat of Quran, اتخذوا أحبارهم ورهبانهم أربابا من دون الله. They took their monks and their scholars as lords besides Allah. Imagine if the people of the world knew, if that much growth had happened, to know that when I take
the Bidens of the world, the other tawaghit all around the world, that this is shirk billah. The Ahlul Bayt had to teach proper tawheed. They had to teach them that Islam was a religion where being bullied wasn't okay. That's not something joyful, something okay. Ayat of Quran again. وَالَّذِينَ مَعَهُ Those who were with Rasulullah. أَشِدَّوْ عَلَى الْكُفَّارِ They're stern with the kafirin, the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's the right way to be. Islam is not a religion of chumps or weaklings. Brothers and sisters, also another beautiful thing now that we're alive in the era of Imam Khomeini, is you see some of these principles being enacted. Some brothers and sisters are obviously aware of this. But remember when before the Islamic Republic, one of their oil tankers was captured? And they had a daring raid, and they captured another tanker, and they were able to free their own tanker. Recently, Greece, of all countries, decided to go over and to repeat the same mistakes of the others. And they captured one of the tankers. And of course, the Islamic Republic, the Mu'mineen, first they protested through the proper channels. After that, they see these guys still aren't getting it. They took two tankers. Sometimes you have to show people that you're not soft, you're not weak. Suddenly the Greeks found a way to reverse the decision. Islam is not a religion of being weak and soft and chump and a bully. The Ahlul Bayt had to teach this. What else did the Ahlul Bayt have to teach? Ruhama bainahum. In Islam, unity is important. Unity is important. You've seen recently where the enemies of Islam, known individuals, individuals who hate all of the Maraj and all of the resistance figures, those individuals will come up with a movie about Sayyidah Fatima. And then there'll be a protest. Mu'mineen, mu'minat, muslimin, protesting. But why though? Ruhama bainahum. Remember, Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, he would go to make Hajj in Masjid al-Haram. He would be in Masjid al-Haram. And he would do iqtida and would pray behind the person who was leading the prayers in Masjid al-Haram. The Imam deliberately did this. He wanted people to see unity. Ruhama bainahum. What are the Ahlul Bayt doing? They're reteaching Islamic principles, not allowing Islam to be used by the enemies of Islam, weaponize it against the believers. Another thing that the Imam, so one of the things that Imams would, every Imam would do would be to reteach Islam as is. Another thing the Imams would do would be that they knew that the real problem is wilaya. The real problem of the people of the world is that not that they don't know what the leaders are doing, the sins of the leader, the sins of the leadership, the ruling class. It's not that people don't know that. People have accepted that and still think that it's okay. So the job of the Imam was to introduce that the wali of society must have certain characteristics. Anything other than that is terrible, it's wrong. Otherwise, let's say old times, it will be the case that the people would know that Yazid was drinking. They would know the Khalifa, who's the Khalifa of the Muslims, is drinking alcohol, committing sins, and they would still come behind him and pray. Let's say that people right now know who Israel is. They know that you're not supposed to normalize ties with them. The people need to be, and slowly this is happening by the way, the brave stances, Islamic, Quranic stances of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, Islam as is, are awakening the Muslim masses. It's not only the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, but even others who now are the people, the masses, are saying that we're not going to normalize ties with the Zionists. What are the Ahlul Bayt doing? Introducing what a leader should be like. What are the characteristics of a leader? Who's a wrong leader? You shouldn't be following this individual. The other one that they did was something that would make them a national security threat. The Ahlul Bayt would also introduce the wali of the time. Not just leadership as a concept and that it's great, But they would say who the wali of the time was. Again, these are our marching orders. What is the shot? All imams did this. Who is the wali of the time? The Ahlul Bayt would do this. In addition to this, the Ahlul Bayt also all had the secret organization of the Shia who were actually working underground with the imam to wrest power from the Tawaghit. So any imam was doing all of these. Now that we've heard that, we want to talk a little bit about what was special about our imam. Why is it that someone who's born 5 years after this man begins his mission, you literally want to say that he was born into the resistance? But we'll start with salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. So let's look at our questions. If you, brothers and sisters, remember that first question was, what was the secret? Why is it that Imam, knowing how desperately people need to know who the wali of the time is, didn't feel comfortable in introducing the Imam after him? What was going on? To the extent that many of the Shia population, notables of the Shia, after the Shahada of the Imam, they still didn't know who the Imam was. It wasn't like open news, everybody. No. What was going on? Brothers and sisters, if you remember, the Abbasids were the Tawaghit who took over after the Umayyads. When they took over, their first job was to establish themselves. They spent a lot of time chasing down the Umayyads and any other sort of armed opposition, right? They're a new government. They're coming into power. They have to make sure that there's no external threats. And they dealt with those threats savagely. One of them, the Taghut, who was in power when Imam Sadiq passed, the one who martyred Imam Sadiq, he was so savage. He had a warehouse full of bodies. Warehouse full of dead bodies. Bones of those who he had. So now, why was it the imam was so secretive about introducing himself, who he was introducing? The Abbasids first went and dealt with every sort of opposition that there was. Hashemites who had risen up, remainders of Bani Umayyah, they established themselves. And then after they had finished everything, and now Mansur is a ruler without any challenge, then he decides to give Imam Sadiq his undivided attention. So Imam Musa is beginning in this kind of a situation where now the undivided attention of the Taghut is right there. And those Tawaghit, we learned about this last time, they know the methods of Ahlul Bayt, they know the individuals, they were waiting for the wasi. So now with the undivided attention, they go over and they want to come after that imam. So our imam began under surveillance, but extreme surveillance. To the extent that our imam would explain to people, those Shias who were committed, who were trying to follow the wali of the time, he would be like, don't tell people that you're connected to me. This is how our imam began. You're going to see later, he's going to get to the stage where in the time of Harun al-Rashid, it's going to be, the words are, two khalifas on the earth. The effect of the imam is going to be seen that the people are saying that there's two khalifas, two people are having wealth brought to them, right? But to begin under these kind of circumstances, how did he manage the secret under organization of the Shia to have those followers all around the world? But he began in this way, where literally he told the people, he said, if you tell them that you're connected with me, you're going to be killed. So this kind of surveillance, the imam begins his mission. Now, those Tawaghit, also because they know that our imam is the definition of an ideological warrior. The very definition of an ideological warrior. In the private room of the imam, the narrators tell us, they say that in the private room of the imam, the one room that the imam has for himself, there were three things, Imam Musa, that he kept. Three symbolic things. One of them was that the imam had a coarse pair of clothing. For us, if we were going to describe it, we would say his military uniform, fatigues, that he just kept in his room. What else did the imam have in his room that nobody else would know? Only the inner circle. The imam had a sword hanging. What else did the Imam have? The Imam had the Quran. So anybody who would look in the life and know the Imam, they would see this Imam was an ideological warrior. The sword, jihad. The libas, those rough fatigues, because I know this is a struggle. This is not going to be easy. It's going to take it. What are we looking for? To establish the Quran on the earth. Ideological warrior. So now, because of this, we see the authorities, each one would end up arresting the Imam, exiling the Imam. The Imam is under surveillance. The Imam was incarcerated. In the time of Mahdi, he was incarcerated. In the time of Harun al-Rashid, it seems more than once, our Imam was in the penitentiary. So they knew this Imam was that ideological leader. He was working, he was moving people in that direction, but that didn't stop the Imam from moving his pieces around. Now, what happened was, as I mentioned, although it began slowly, so in the beginning, when our Imam began his activities, we're talking now in the time of Harun al-Rashid, of Mansur. Initially, our Imam began his work slowly, secretly, quietly, pushing, inviting, calling, connecting, telling people. And it would be the case that our Imam would sometimes be on the run. They would tell us that sometimes our Imam was on the run. The authorities would be looking for him. He would tell people, look, they're going to come. They're going to ask you about me. They ask you if you've seen me. Say you don't even know me. And the people would be captured, would be taken to prison. They would be interrogated. And they would follow the instructions of the Imam. So it began that way. But slowly, by the time of Harun al-Rashid, who was a very capable and very evil caliph, the table had turned to a certain extent. Again, not to the extent that it was like the time of Imam Sadiq, where Imam Sadiq was predicted that he could have been the Qa'im, that he could have risen up, that prediction we talked about before. The hadith also mentioned that the Shia failed. How did they fail? One of the things that's mentioned in the hadith, the Shias couldn't keep their mouth shut. They shared certain secrets before they were supposed to. But we know that general principle, whenever the followers don't have enough taqwa, don't have enough iman, the resistance collapses. They don't have the sabr, the resistance collapses. So now, what happens now, is now we're fast forwarding to the time of Harun. In the time of Harun, in the beginning, Harun is an early caliph. He's coming into power. Very capable individual. He wants to see if there's a way that he can best the Imam. He actually knows that the Imam has been appointed by God. We actually have stories about that, where Ma'mun is talking about how he's a Shia. Ma'mun, who killed Imam Ridha, he says, well, I'm Shia. He said, are you kidding me? How are you Shia? He says, I learned to be Shia from my father. Harun made me a Shia. He said, how did that happen? He said that we went to Medina. We went to make Hajj. Then we were all sitting there, and this one individual, we're told, because Harun is trying to do a PR stunt, the beginning of his mission, trying to curry favor, trying to win. Very complicated individual, very capable leader. This man, he said that whenever somebody would come in, he would ask them their lineage, their heritage. You're from this and such tribe. You're from the Ansar. You're from Bani Hashim. You're from this. And my father would give them some money according to who they were. More respect for more individuals. So Ma'mun is this clever individual, and he's watching what's happening. He said, and then one individual came in, and when they asked, who are you? He announced his name. My name is Musa, the son of everything changed. All of a sudden, the Khalifa says, don't let him get off his horse. His donkey, I believe he's on donkey. Don't let him get off. Have him right over here. When he gets, he stands up. Please, you sit in my spot. He talks to him very respectfully, asking him advice, these kind of things. And then when he left, right? And Ma'mun has been seeing that up until now, we've been giving out 2,000 gold pieces, 5,000 gold pieces. When it comes to him, we give him a tiny amount, and we say that we're apologizing, we go. He says that I also followed the Imam, Imam Musa. He said, when I followed him, then he told me, Imam Musa, he said, after your father, you're going to be the Khalifa. Be kind to my children. Have taqwa. So Ma'mun said that out of all of the boys, I was the one who was the boldest with my father. So I asked my father, I said that all these other individuals are coming. You're giving respect based on their thing. Then one individual comes, and this individual, you tell him to come in this way. And then after that, after all that respect, you tell us to escort him, to help him get back on his ride. And then you give him that small amount. And then he said, Harun said, that he is the hujjat of Allah. And Ma'mun said, well, if he's the hujjat of Allah, why aren't we following him? He told Ma'mun, he said, if you fight with me over the kingdom, I'll finish you. So he knows who he's dealing with, Harun. Clever, capable. So at first what he tried to do was, when he had his first meetings with the imam, at first it was a softer approach. Again, out of his wickedness. For instance, he came to the imam and he insisted on meeting with the imam, and then he told the imam, he said that, I would love to return Fadak to Ahlul Bayt. Fadak was taken. I would love to return that to Ahlul Bayt. Please tell me what the borders, what the Fadak is. So the imam told him, he said, no, it's okay. No, Fadak was taken from Fatima. Tell me where it is. I'll go over, I'll give it to you. Bani Hashim, I'm a good guy. He said, no, if I tell you where it is, you're not going to give it to me. He said, no, tell me. So the imam started to describe it. He said, okay, if you want to give it to us, then one border of Fadak is Yemen. One border is Armenia. One border is... When he starts describing this, and Harun realizes, they said his face visibly changed color. He realized he's talking about the whole entire Islamic kingdom. He said, well, why don't you just come over and take the seat? There were other instances where Harun would try to use the PR stunt, the idea that he was connected to Ahlul Bayt somehow. They said that he went to go make ziyarah of Rasulullah, but then instead of just saying, Assalamu alaikum ya Rasulullah, instead of saying that, he said, Assalamu alaikum, and then he said, cousin. Right? Because we're from Abbas, we're cousin. And immediately after he did that, the imam again stopping him from his PR stunt, the imam comes in, and then he says that, Assalamu alaikum, he says, oh father. And Harun is, he doesn't like this, by the way. Harun doesn't like this. Harun continued to try and pay his respects, but remember, by this time, the imam is at the stage, he's more open than he is with the others, right? He's very clear now, and it's going to lead up to, but the state of the Shia, if you see after the death of our imam, what the status of the Shia was like, meaning the fear that Harun had, what happened was that they said that he went and he met the imam in Hajj. Now was a more direct confrontation based on this one hadith. He tells the imam, he says, are you the person who people make bay'ah to? And they said the first thing that was very interesting was that Harun, that powerful tyrant, he came walking up to the imam, and the imam didn't get up out of respect. He just sat there until Harun comes right over. Then he asks them that tough question in front of people. Anta alladhi yubayyuka, you the person people are making bay'ah to? Then he said, yes. He said that I am Imam al-Qulub. You are Imam al-Jusum. You rule over the hearts. I mean, you rule over the bodies. I rule over the hearts. Right? So now at this stage, what happened is Harun, he thinks that what I need to do is to imprison the imam, to bring the imam in. So he had the imam brought to prison, and normally the way that they do it is to try and make negotiations, to try and see there's a way of working things out. The imam resisted, and then, of course, in the end, he ends up martyring that imam. There was another question, though, that before we end. We said that there was one situation where the imam would have one of his companions, Ali ibn Yaqtin, someone who was already up there, the wazir of Harun. This man wants to quit, wants to leave. And the imam says, no, you can't quit. There's no retirement in Islam. You keep going. The other individual, a man named Safwan, what happened was that he used to make his business. You know, today we have car rentals. He had a camel rental business. The Khalifa came, Harun, and he wanted to get some camels to go on Hajj. So he's a businessman. He said, Bismillah, go over and take them to go to Hajj. The Imam met him. When the Imam met him, he said, Safwan, he said, everything you do is good, but one thing. Startled, such a good man. What do I do that's bad? He said, you rented camels to the caliph? He said, but I did it for Hajj. Just for Hajj. Not gambling, singing, just Hajj. So then the Imam told him, he said, do you want them to be alive? He said, did they pay you up front? He said, no. He said, they're going to pay me when I come back from Hajj. He said, do you want them, this system, to stay in power until they come back from Hajj? He said, yeah, I want to get my money. He said, right? Safwan ended up not having business. He sold his business. Not that it was haram to interact with the Taghut. The problem was the heart of Safwan. Kufr to the Taghut. So to this extent, the Imam went and he trained his individuals. We ask Allah, by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad, to make us people who are raised with both Imam Musa ibn Ja'far and also Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha. We ask that he gives us greater understanding of our current responsibilities and helps us to pave the way for the coming of their grandson, the Mahdi. We end with salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Thank you very much. Salla ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Inshallah, just a few announcements. Our next program will be this coming Friday, June 17th. Inshallah, we'll have another Good Life lecture with Sheikh Osama. Please make sure you stay tuned for all our different WhatsApp messages and social media channels for more information and programs. There's also a summer program happening in the summer for the community, so please feel free to learn more about that on our social media pages and our WhatsApp group, inshallah. Thank you all. Wassalamu alaikum. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. إذا وقعت الواقعة ليس لوقعتها كاذبة خافضة رافعة إذا رجت الأرض رجا وبست الجبال بسا فكانت هباء منبثا وكنتم أزواجا ثلاثة فأصحاب الميمنة ما أصحاب الميمنة وأصحاب المشأمة ما أصحاب المشأمة والسابقون السابقون أولئك المقربون في جنات النعيم ثلة من الأولين وقليل من الآخرين.